Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Go to Ustream. We are streaming tonight. Ustream.tv. Is that what it is? Ustream.tv. And look at this beard I'm growing. Huh? It's coming along. It's going to be all right. You know, it occurred to me tonight, I was watching the first 6 or 7 minutes here of Rachel Maddow's program on MSNBC, because I had to, I try to catch it every night, because I'm getting the end of Oberman's program on MSNBC, and of course I wasn't going to miss it tonight, since this is when he came back from his banishment to the wilderness for 3 days, 4 days, God, what a joke. But let me tell you something. The most fact-based, incisive, truth-saturated program on television is the 1 hour a day of the Rachel Maddow Show. If you want to go watch that and then come back here later, that's all right with me. Well, I'm seriously, Kathy. I mean, what do people get when they come to this program? Yeah, me. But Maddow's program is, Rachel's program is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. I can't think of anything except maybe the old Edward R. Murrow program when he used to do interviews. I know Keith Olbermann always says, good night, good luck, which was Olbermann's, Edward R. Murrow's exit line. But boy, I'll tell you, if anyone comes close to the kind of broadcast journalism that defines broadcast journalism, it would be Rachel Maddow. You've heard me say many times that I think television is designed to make you forget, to put you to sleep, to sell you garbage. There are a couple of exceptions, as there always is, when somebody makes a sweeping generalization like that. There are a couple of profound exceptions, and Rachel's program is one of them. Okay, that's enough. This needs to be mentioned. Tonight is the commemoration of Kristallnacht. It took place on November 9th, 1938. That was the Nazi Germany's pogrom against the Jews that took place on this night in 1938. And it marked the beginning of the destruction and mass death of Europe's Jews. 1938 was not that long ago, was it? Huh? What is that? 72 years ago, that's all. And it was on this night, the night of broken glass, that the Jewish populations across Europe, well, not across Europe, excuse me, across Germany and areas where there was a large German population. It was in those areas that the Jews were attacked, their property was attacked, their homes burned, their businesses burned, signs painted on the windows, swastikas, and underneath, Juden. And I just think it bears some type of collective memory about that, that extends beyond the world's Jews. So, it was this night, 1938, Kristallnacht. You probably saw it on the news tonight. Something was launched off the coast of Southern California. When was it? Last night? Was it last night or was it today? The AP says the Pentagon is trying to figure out what it was. And spokesman for the Navy, the Air Force, the Defense Department, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, all of them say they don't know what the hell it was. They have no idea. And they're looking into a video posted on the website of Southern California television station KFMB. If you want to see this, if you missed it, KFMB. The video appears to show a rocket or some other object shooting up into the sky and leaving a large contrail over the Pacific. A Pentagon spokesman, a colonel, said today that officials can't confirm that there was a launch, and if there was, they can't confirm by whom. He says officials are talking to the Air Force, Navy, and NORAD, as well as civilian authorities who control and monitor airspace. And none of the airline pilots who were flying in and out of that crowded corridor, this is not that far from Los Angeles, reported seeing anything. But the traffic copter, I believe, for KFMB, KF, like Frank, MB, recorded this. And I saw it on both NBC and ABC's newscast this evening. And pretty freaky. Now, the part of the story that's very, very, very upsetting, not upsetting, but very strange to me. How would NORAD not know? The North American Air Defense Command, they don't know. This is the same NORAD who didn't have a clue when five airliners, allegedly, were hijacked on September 11th, 2001. This is the same NORAD, this is the same Defense Department, this is the same military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned against, and the obvious incompetence of these people. I mean, if you look at the video, and I hope you go check it out, something is launching into the Southern California sky off the coast of Southern California, and our crack air defense team and our crack Navy and our crack Air Force don't have a clue? And some of you people wonder why so many of us don't believe the official story of what happened on September 11th, 2001. Are you kidding me? Please. I got an interesting email here from Steve in Boston talking about last night's show. He says, Mike, hi, last night I went to see Inside Job, the film, with my nephew. When I got home, I heard you ranting about how they just can't stand to see a black man in the White House. I'm not saying I totally disagree with you, but after seeing the movie last night, I'm not sure it's a message you should be sending our side, that they can't stand a black man. As I watched the movie about the corrupt CEOs and banksters, there were some black CEOs who took some huge bonuses. You see, the other white board members didn't discriminate against the black CEOs when it came to voting on the over-bloated pay and bonuses. These guys love anybody who's playing the greed game. If you're a greedy, selfish, arrogant blank, we will embrace you. It doesn't matter if you're a blank with white skin or a blank with black skin. You got a couple typos there or something. I can't read it, Steve. I think they hate Obama because he has a D after his name. Plain and simple, just like they hated Clinton for being a Democrat. I mean, it's not like Obama and Clinton aren't corporatists. If Michael Steele were in the White House as president, I don't think it would be an issue. I also think it's more about class than it is race. These black millionaires and billionaires don't care about working people either. I'm not saying you shouldn't rant about racism. I just think you have a lot of power. No. And it would better suit the left if the message was more about unity, more about how much we have in common, how we, as employees and co-workers, get along fine with each other. We actually like each other. Even with our inner prejudices, we genuinely like working with each other. It took a lot of white people to put him in office, too. Mike, please start pounding that message. Help build a movement that will put us all on the same page. Steve in Boston. We'll be right back.
Did I stress you out? My sweater is on backwards and inside out, and you say, how appropriate. I don't want to dissect everything today. I don't mean to pick you apart, you see, but I can't help it. And there I go, jumping before the cushion has gone off. Slapped me with the splintered ruler. And it would knock me to the floor if I wasn't there already. Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Our good friend Laura Flanders has a book out called At the Tea Party. And the subtitle is The Wingnuts, Whack Jobs, and Whitey Whiteness of the New Republican Right and Why We Should Take It Seriously. It's titled At the Tea Party. And contributors to her book, it's a compendium of, well, has a lot of contributions by a wide range of leading experts. But everybody you're familiar with, from Max Blumenthal to Alexander Coburn to Katha Pollitt, Glenn Greenwald, everybody's favorite, Chris Hedges, Jim Hightower, Tim Wise, on and on and on, all contributed to this. And Rachel, Laura May, call in this evening. If so, we'll chat with her for a few minutes. You can go to her website, which is lauraflanders.com, and check this out. Reported at Huffington Post is the fact that scientists say they have for the first time now tracked how certain non-toxic elements of the of oil from the BP spill quickly became a dinner for plankton and then entered into the food web in the Gulf of Mexico. We are now, it won't be too long before we will be eating what the scientists tell us is a non-toxic aspect of the BP oil spill in the Gulf. This new study, conducted by experts at the Dauphin Island Sea Lab in Alabama, the new study sheds light on two key questions about the aftermath of that 170-plus million-gallon spill back in April. What happened to the oil that covered the water surface, and will that oil work its way into the diet of Gulf marine life? The answer to the second question apparently is yes. The chief author of the study said, quote, everybody's making a huge deal of where did the oil go. The answer, it just became food. Okay. Now, according to reports, the study didn't specifically track the toxic components of the oil. That has people worried. It focused on the way the basic element, carbon, moved through the beginnings of the all-important food web. The scientist, William Graham, said the, quote, eye-opening, end quote, speed of how the oil components moved into the ecosystem may affect the overall health of the Gulf. Michael Crosby of the Moat Marine Laboratory in Florida didn't take part in the study, but said what fascinated him was that the carbon zipped through the food web faster than scientists expected. That in itself isn't alarming, apparently, but if the non-toxic part of the oil is moving so rapidly through the food web, well, then it begs the question, what's happened to the toxic compounds of the released oil? I'll tell you what, to the extent that I can stop myself, it will be a long time before I go for seafood that I can identify as having been caught in the Gulf. And if that statement or that attitude upsets people who make their living from the seafood caught in the Gulf, you know, I'm sorry that it sounds as explicit as it does. But to the fishermen and the fisher folk, the people who made a living before BP, what difference, before BP ruined it, perhaps they should turn to BP for financial assistance for the rest of their lives, obviously. Remember how the big fund was established and this Republican moron from Texas, Joe Barton, said that he was ashamed that America was acting this way and blackmailing, that the Obama administration was blackmailing BP because they were told to put up a relief fund. And this guy's from Texas, and he's going to be one of the committee chairs when the new Congress goes into effect the 1st of January. By the way, as Rachel pointed out tonight, that Congress does not go into effect until the 1st of January. So the Democrats still hold a huge majority in both the House and the Senate. I wonder if they're going to use it when they come back. You know, you listen to Eric Cantor and John Orangeman Boehner and the rest of these freaks. They give the impression that when they come back from this recess, okay, we're going to start making legislation. No, you're not. You're going to sit there and shut your goddamn mouths until the 1st of the year. Then, you see, when you come back from your Christian holiday, then you can start your final assault on the American way of life. But through November and December, you don't have to shut up, but you will sit there and do what the majority tells you to do. And I would just love to see the majority of the Democrats for once, grab these sons of bitches by the throat and shake them like you would shake a rat. I would just like to see that. Oh, so don't worry about the oil. Everything's going to be okay. Just be careful what you eat.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. What strikes me about the blurb that comes with Laura Flanders' new book at the Tea Party is the similarity between what is blurbed on the cover, or at least in the promo about this book, and what Noam Chomsky is saying. And that is essentially, it wouldn't be smart to dismiss the dangers represented by the Tea Party. A lot of us, myself especially, mock these morons because I really don't see any redeeming quality. I agree with Chomsky in that, you know, why in a time of tremendous frustration in this country, why is this reaction coming from the right? That's the thing that I think irritates me more than anything else. But anyway, Laura Flanders has a new book out called At the Tea Party, subtitled The Wingnuts, Whack Jobs, and Whitey Whiteness of the New Republican Right and Why We Should Take It Seriously. And she joins us now from New York. Hey, Laura, how you doing?
Hey, Mike, great to be on with you.
Yeah, it is. It's always good to hear from you. You know, when Kathy told me that you were going to be on tonight, she said, yeah, talk about the book, but ask her about Sarah Palin's reaction and what Palin said, either about you or about the book. Well, okay, clue us in. What was said?
Well, you got to see it. You just got to go to the website. You got to go to orbooks.com and see the video. There's a YouTube video Palin on Larry King saying there should be mass purchasing about the Tea Party, and then book burning. Your viewers can tell me what they thought.
You are kidding me.
Well, we had a little help from some motion graphics, but, you know, check it out for yourself.
What's the website?
Go to orbooks.com and look at the video.
OR Books, like letter O, letter R, books.com.
Then you go down to you find the At the Tea Party book, and you go to the Tea Party page, and then you go down to the bottom, and there's the video.
I encourage
your viewers to do it, and while they're chuckling, they can order the book right there, because this book, we are not dealing with Amazon, big supporters of the Republican Party. We are not dealing with sending books to and fro across the country, dead trees, gasoline, all the rest. You can only buy it at the website, orbooks.com. So,
What a great idea.
That's a new idea.
That is an excellent idea. Now, I noticed that you have a list of contributors to this book that it's just absolutely a who's who of the very best writers.
It looks like a who's who of Mike Malloy guests, I think.
Well, you know, actually, Laura, the truth is, I very seldom, I think you've been on this program more than anyone else that I've ever had on as a guest. And I think you've only been on this program three times. So that tells
all right,
you.
So Mike, a who's who of people that Mike refers to.
Well, Alexander Coburn is one of the contributors. Max Blumenthal, you know, there's a couple of home runs. Glenn Greenwald, Chris Hedges, Jim Hightower. I mean, just goes Melissa Harris Lacewell, Katha Pollitt.
There's great people.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, I'd like to pick up on your point about making fun of the morons.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's where I was, you know. I was thinking, oh, come on, too much attention to too crazy a fringe.
Right, right.
And then two things happened. One, I thought, well, two things happened. The first was, at my Thanksgiving dinner table, round the table last year, a guy who's a member of our extended family, contractor, 80 years old at the time, now he's 81, still works with his hand, Carl, clearly is a Tea Party follower. He starts talking about it. He talks about how he got a TV to watch Glenn Beck every day with his twin brother. They both work with their hands, still contractors, 80 years old, never had health insurance before Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who listen to me and you on Air America for years and wasn't persuaded by us, got persuaded by Glenn Beck. This is the fall of 09.
Mm-hmm.
And I start thinking, this isn't just far away. This isn't just wackos in not very populous states. This is right here in Brooklyn, in my, you know, extended circle.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened here? And I have to say, while the book clearly wants to do both, yes, we want to mock morons, but we also are raising a question, and as you said, it's a book written by a lot of people, I just edited it, but we want to raise the question, okay, what's our side of this story? And I think our side of this story is that megaphones for people like yourself and for left-wing folks who said the Democrats weren't doing enough around the economic crisis, they weren't creating enough jobs, they weren't bringing us enough reform of health care, they weren't responding enough to the economic crisis that people were facing. I think that there's a legitimate question. How did our voices get drowned out? And instead of a progressive moment, which you would have
right.
thought the fall of 08 would have led to,
mm-hmm.
We have this right-wing revival, and the book goes into the various answers for that. But it's a bitter question for those of us who thought surely electing Democrats in an economic crisis was just a start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the part that has astonished me, and I guess like a handful of people, or more than a handful of people on the left, who are beginning to reconsider their approach to this whole reaction from the Tea Party. That, and I don't call them Tea Party. I call them teabaggers. I try to be as ugly about these folks as I possibly can. But the thing that has really stunned me, just knocked the wind out of my sails, is why this came from the right. I mean, for 8 years, the Bush-Cheney policies set up this present moment. And the anger, you know, the anger's legitimate, but my God, to direct it at Obama, there's a whole catalog of things that we could get pissed off at Obama for, but the prelude, the build-up is from the Republican Party. Yeah. And it didn't start with Bush and Cheney. It started with Reagan. So
yeah.
This is the part I can't get my mind around, as to unless the left created such a vacuum and did nothing to respond, really respond to what people were feeling. And you know, politics like nature abhors a vacuum. Something is going to step into that. And the vacuum apparently was taken over by this right-wing cacophony of nutbags.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Mike. And I think that there are a lot of answers to how that happened. I mean, no question, in the spring of 09, there was a perfect storm of money and media and a black man in the White House that you could have this kind of people's power front be presented as the sort of populist revolt, when really it is the function of a whole lot of the same old folks that brought us the Reagan backlash, simply with new outfits and new puppets. It's the same puppeteers that you're talking about, and that's what happened in 09, no question. You had the Kochs, you had the mysterious right-wing funders behind groups like Americans for Prosperity and Dick Armey's Freedom Works. These are the same folks who've been around for decades doing exactly the work you're talking about. Nobody should have been shocked, mm-hmm. but somehow we're told it's this up-from-the-bottom people power. It's bunk. But at the same time, you're right that there was a vacuum left by, I think, frankly, you know, liberals were doing their thing. They were backing up their president, Barack Obama. I think it was the left that saw just how small our voice is in mm-hmm. the American political spectrum today, mm-hmm. that some of us, I remember on, you remember October when they first tried to pass the bank bailout and it failed in the Congress because
right.
Congress was getting calls 9 to 10 against it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I were both on the air around about then, and there was fury in the land coming from right and left from all over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You had, for the most part, Democrats buckle under and say, no, no, we have to do this. The sky is falling. Chicken Little is right. And the rest of us didn't have much of a way to continue to have a voice, try as we might. And then you come to the sort of February of 09, which is when people date the beginning of this Tea Party thing, when you have this crazy CNBC reporter ranting on the floor of the stock exchange about the evils of mortgage assistance.
Right.
That very week was the week the people from the Working Families Party in Connecticut took poor folks from Hartford to the doorsteps of people who'd received bank bonuses from banks that had been bailed out by the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the, I can't remember what, the bus tour of the rich and infamous or something.
Right, right.
And they got a ton of media attention, and they got fear in Washington. You had people in stockbroker outfits on the floor of Congress testifying that they felt their lives were in danger. And somebody called the whistle. Was it the Obama administration? Was it Rahm Emanuel? I don't know. Who called off the dogs, as it were?
Mm-hmm.
But that Working Family Party tour project stopped. At least it stopped getting any media profile.
Yeah, it will.
I wonder, you know, was it that? Was, if we had kept going, if we had kept saying, no, you know what, it's an anger from the people. It's not right or left. It's people who've been disenfranchised, who've lost their homes. They've lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We're angry. Don't leave it up to the Koch brothers to do our angry.
Boy, that's
us.
The truth. Hold on a second, Laura. Let me do some commercials. We'll come right back. We're talking to Laura Flanders. The book is At the Tea Party. And you can get it now by going to orbooks.com. Stick around. We're going to talk with Laura a couple more minutes. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. The book is At the Tea Party, The Wingnuts, Whack Jobs, and Whitey Whiteness of the New Republican Right, and Why We Should Take It Seriously. And we're talking with a woman who's put all this together, a very impressive list of contributors to this book. it is still difficult, though, for me, Laura, to see the Tea Party as anything more Then you remember when you were in high school and you were in chemistry lab and the instructor would give you a piece of flash paper and it was so funny because so much fun because you light it, you know, it's gone. And I just don't see the Tea Party as being anything of substance. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me they're going to be around for a while, causing all sorts of destruction in this republic.
Well, I mean, look at what we mean by they. If you mean people that are in favor of abolishing Fannie and Freddie, the Federal Reserve, the NEA, the NEH, who would like to...
destroying a woman's right to privacy, all of it.
Exactly, all that stuff. Those folks are going to be there, and you're going to have people like Daryl Issa, who today is talking about spending millions of dollars on investigations and subcommittees pandering to a constituency that has this name, the Tea Party.
Is America going to put up with Daryl Issa and what he has promised? Do you really?
Well, I think if it's about trying to sort of torture and pay back Democrats for, well, you tell me. I don't think we had enough investigations in the first 2 years of the Obama administration, frankly.
Well, did we have any?
Well, I think it's about taking up time. No, we didn't have enough. We didn't have any. The two things, though, I think that are important is whether or not there are organizations called Tea Party Patriots or whatever you want to call it. There is a constituency now that's been named that can be used by the right to constantly push the conversation to the right and talk about this threat among the electorate. You know, the threat in the election isn't so much Tea Party as the, you know, $4 billion that was spent on a midterm. God knows what we're going to spend on the presidential race.
It's just horrible to think about. Yeah.
Coming from people like the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, that's the real threat. But the public face right now are these Tea Party folks. And I think the importance for progressives, for the left, is for us to say, you know, there's a challenge here for us to create a Tea Party on the left, a mobilization that intimidates the Democratic Party as much as the Tea Party seems to have shook up the Republican Party, and that can be a force to change politics at the local level, because I do think at the local level these Tea Partiers are going to have an impact, and they're already getting elected to school board and all the rest as we're speaking. Some of them, absolutely, just disregard and keep on going. But some of the others, I think, are people who are genuinely looking for a place to be angry about the condition of their lives. And if we care about politics and about building movement, I think we've got to take that seriously. We've got to look at it and say, you know, where is our voice in this?
Well, God forbid that the left becomes the reactionaries and the right become the activists, which which seems to be what is going on here. I came up in that period of time, I'm sure you experienced some of it too, when the activism always came from the left. And before you and I were even alive, the activism has always come from the left. The reactionaries were us on the right. Now all of a sudden it seems like that has gone through a 180 reversal. And I think we both are in agreement here that reactionaries really don't get that much done. It is the activists who get things done. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is I hope perhaps maybe there is a wake-up call in this teabag movement that will shake the left out of whatever lethargy that we've gotten into and make us activists again rather than reactionaries. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can comfort ourselves with the thought that the right have been copying tactics from the left from forever. So we can go back another cycle.
Now they've stolen the language. That's the part that is infuriating to me, to use the language of the civil rights movement, to use the language of the student movement, to use the language of the women's movement. On the right, to me, is almost, I'm not religious, but if there was anything that I would identify as sacrilegious, it would be that.
We should have patented all those terms.
or kick somebody's ass for using them out of context.
One of the things that I'm particularly pleased of having in this book, and I hope people go and check out that video at orbooks.com, is a transcript at the end of the book from a session that was held at the Western States Center, a good progressive group in the Northwest, pulled together activists on the ground with an experience fighting, for example, the militia movement in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And these are folks who are on the ground, and they're saying, look, we're progressives or we're LGBT people, or we're feminists, or we're pro-choice. What are our choices? We get to either leave our towns because it's so uncomfortable for us here, or we have to work with our neighbors. Mm-hmm. Those are our options. These are people who decided we're going to work with our neighbors. And their description of what works and what doesn't work, but what they're up against and what works in their communities to roll back this extreme right attack, I think is worth the price of the book, in the sense that they say, you know, we noticed that it was only the right that were holding these meetings about the Constitution, and thousands of people would show up, or hundreds. When we started holding meetings ourselves about the Constitution, their numbers plummeted, and our meetings were packed out. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's sort of saying, you know, don't just sit back and judge these folks or make fun or this is all just absurd. You need to also act, because as you pointed out, in a vacuum or in the dark, the fungus grows. Mm-hmm. We need to be out there being light.
That is so true. The name of the book is At the Tea Party. Go to lauraflanders.com anytime, but you might want to go to orbooks.com now. Check out the video she's talking about and buy the book. Laura, always.
And you're doing exactly the right thing, Mike. We need you on the air, and this is the answer, the voice in the darkness.
Yeah, boy, is that the truth. Thanks, Laura. Thanks for checking in.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing me on.
All right, take care. Take care. Laura Flanders, you can pick up her program on, she's on Free Speech TV. She is on the web. She's, Grit TV. She's all over the place. Get her book. At the Tea Party. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Truckers, we...
It is 7 past the hour. We're going to come to your phone calls here in just a moment, so hold on. Dan Frumkin, who used to be at the Washington Post, now writes for Huffington Post. Points out something that I've maintained and a lot of people on the left have maintained. Well, I wouldn't even say on the left. A lot of Bush critics have maintained since Cheney went on the hunt to find Bush a vice presidential running mate and discovered himself. And that is that Cheney has been the manipulator of the 8 years of this poor, miserable Bush, this poor, stupid man. Now, Dan Frumkin, writing at Huffington Post, points out that initial reports about former President George W. Bush's new memoir, Decision Points, suggest that it refutes the theory that Dick Cheney was the true power behind the throne. You know, this is George W. Bush, who has been a failure at everything he has ever done, and never would have been the president were it not for, the second time, rigged voting machines, the first time, the Supreme Court ordering the vote counting to stop when Bush was ahead. So, I mean, the guy defines failure. And he hates that. You know, he's never been as smart as Jeb or as slick in thievery and fraud and stealing as his other brother, the one that got involved in the savings and loan stuff. He's not as upper crust as his father. He's not an unbridled psychopath like his mother. So George, you know, George has just been kind of like, oh, nobody respects me. Well, all the talk about Cheney running the show really, really, really got under Bush's skin. And, the suggestions now, from the Flying Monkey Right is that this book proves that George W. Bush was this great leader. Hogsnot. In fact, as Frumkin says, it's hardly surprising, of course, that in Bush's reimagining of his presidency, he would not give that theory any ammunition, at least not overtly. But Cheney is everywhere in the book. Everywhere. You know, Bush is a typical right-winger, a blame shifter. As several observers, Dan writes, have previously noted, Bush in his memoir repeatedly complained about being blindsided. Right? I was blindsided. I had no idea. He was blindsided by the picture, the torture pictures from Abu Ghraib. Oh, yeah. Which, in fact, was an utterly predictable outcome of his administration's decision to disregard previously inviolable rules respecting the basic human rights of detainees. These were not people who had been convicted of anything. That's so difficult for right-wingers to make that distinction, isn't it? Well, if you get picked up in the Middle East, you're guilty. And you deserve torture. He claims he was blindsided by the controversy within his own Justice Department about warrant surveillance techniques that were blatantly illegal. Oh, I didn't know that. He was blindsided by the financial crisis. He had no idea, you see, when he ordered the destruction of the budget surpluses and the paying down of the national debt as a result of Clinton policies. He claims he's blindsided. He didn't know that the tax cuts he ordered were going to destroy them. Blindsided. The common theme is that these three areas were among the many that Bush essentially abrogated to Cheney. Cheney was in charge of all this. So Bush is making the case that this was not the Bush presidency. It was the Cheney presidency. Now, for those of us who figured this out about 10 minutes after the Supreme Court stopped the vote counting on December 12th, 2000, this is not a surprise. Critics of Dick Cheney, including Colonel Larry Wilkerson, who served as chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, have long maintained that there was ample evidence, that there is ample evidence, tracing the practice of prisoner abuse by U.S. soldiers directly back to Cheney's office. You know, maybe Bush can make a legitimate claim that he was blindsided about all these issues. But who is doing the blindsiding? The vampire, this goddamn monster, Dick Cheney, who continues to operate even though he doesn't have a pulse or a heartbeat anymore. You don't think that's weird? Colonel Wilkerson wrote back in 2006, for instance, that what started with John Yoo, David Addington, Alberto Gonzalez, William Haynes at the Pentagon, and several others, all under the watchful and willing eye of the vice president, went down through the Secretary of Defense to the commanders in the field and created two separate pressures that resulted in the violation of longstanding practice and law. It all came from Cheney. And poor George Bush, who has long been pissed off that people said that. Now, in his own book, I don't know who wrote the damn thing, but in his own book, he makes that case. There it is. As Frumkin says, if Bush was surprised at what was going on, or even if he feels justified in pretending that he was surprised, it was because Cheney had developed his own chain of command when it came to any number of matters related to intelligence in general and interrogation in particular. And it wasn't just in those areas. Don't forget, Dick Cheney was a classic right-wing Republican coward where it concerned combat, war, bombing people, killing people, taking a weapon, and going into the jungles of Vietnam or going into the deserts of wherever U.S. imperialism decided to go. Cheney was a goddamn coward and remains a coward. He was so cowardly, this vampire, that he waited until an idiot like George Bush was being thrust forward by the capitalist power crazy people who knew, okay, let's get Bush in there. We can manipulate this poor miserable little bastard. I mean, we give him oil companies. We give him drilling companies. We give him baseball teams. We get the Saudis to bail his ass out every time he boxes himself in. This guy is going to be easy. Put him in as president. Who are we going to put in as vice president? How are we going to control him? How are we going to control him? Two words, the vampire, excuse me, two words, Dick Cheney. Yeah, the evil dead. It almost, not quite, because I just fundamentally think that the Bush crime family is a crime family. I think that his old lady created more of a criminal enterprise than Ma Barker did with her sons. But it takes me right up to the edge of feeling sorry for George W. Bush. That he was absolutely blindsided by Dick Cheney repeatedly.
I just got to say something about Bush just for one second.
Yeah?
What is it with Republicans and little jars of feti, little fetuses in jars? Rick Santorum had one. Barbara Bush kept one. I wonder if she still carries it in her purse.
Well, Barbara Bush was...
Aleister Crowley.
Was in favor of a woman's right to privacy where it concerned abortions. Barbara Bush, and
apparently,
so was Laura Bush.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they just like to play with dead things.
Like Cheney.
Well,
but I just wonder, you know, Rick Santorum brings home the dead baby. Barbara Bush has the dead baby that she waves in front of the kids.
Okay, you're starting to give me a queasy stomach. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Texan, I enforce justice for the law. You ride to Texas to enforce the law. Well, I'm long tall Texan.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Don is in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I've been holding on for almost an hour. Hey, Don.
Yes, I was just calling because I don't know if you've heard this news. I just read a news article about birds in Alaska, how their beaks are becoming deformed. It's something like 20% of one species and then a bunch of another, of crows, and I forget what the other species is. And they say they don't know the cause. Environmental trying to figure out the cause, but it's usually from chemical, some kind of chemical runoff or pollution or something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just wanted to make a comment about that. If you'd heard about that,
not that particular report, but over the past two or three decades, I mean, that's those reports keep showing up about not just the species that all of a sudden start to be deformed, but the species that are disappearing. You know, Kathy and I were talking the other day about this incredible rise in the numbers of children who are suffering from that autism spectrum, everything from autism to Asperger's to learning disabilities to ADD, ADHD, all this stuff. And it's not, this explosion in numbers is not necessarily because the reporting is better. There is something in the environment, and I just don't buy the thimerosal argument. There is something a lot more widespread than vaccine preservative that is causing this. So species of birds with their, you know, deformed beaks or amphibians that have huge open cancers, or children that are suffering these inexplicable learning disorders. Yeah, there is. I mean, we're poisoning the nest, and there is reaction to that. So yeah, I'm not familiar with exactly the situation you're talking about, Don. But as far as environmental poison, it goes on without let up. Of course, it started, I think, as soon as we entered into the Industrial Revolution, it started. I don't know what chemicals were around then, but the chemicals that came as a result of combustion, coal combustion, hell, just wood smoke combustion. But the Industrial Revolution brought with it the beginning of the destruction of our nest, the planet, Gaia, you know, this living ball, the blue dot, whatever you want to call it. Carl Sagan called it the blue dot. And unless those issues are, thanks, Dan, unless those issues are addressed, those fundamental, elemental issues about environmental degradation or global climate change, whatever you want to call it, I don't know how. I don't know how we as a species pull out of this. I think there will be life on this planet until the sun explodes, which is predicted to be a couple of billion years from now. But human life, we're getting close to the edge. Now, you know, you and I think in terms of a human lifespan, you know, 70 to 100 years. That's, you know, but the planet doesn't handle the situation like that. It may take 500 years for the poison, the toxins, the destruction to finally manifest. And by then, you know, there's absolutely nothing that humans can do. Nothing. I mean, the so-called tipping point. There's just nothing. You know, if you're tied to a stake and somebody fires a bullet at you, there is a point in the trajectory of that bullet where that's it. I mean, it doesn't make any difference what you think might happen. It's going to hit you and kill you. There's no stopping it. That's not a very good analogy, is it? But you understand what I'm saying. So as far as deformed beaks, I'm not surprised. Deformed fetuses inside these animals, whether they're amphibian or fish or birds or whatever. And as far as the human species is concerned, you know, the cynics will say, the Republicans, the right wingers say, well, you're out of your mind. Life expectancy has increased dramatically. No, life expectancy has not. Well, it has, but you have to understand what life expectancy is and how it's determined. If you have a human being who lives to be 100 and one other human being who dies at age 1, the average life expectancy of those two is 50 years. To both of those people, that's a ridiculous number. So we don't lose as many infants in this country as we did, say, back during, oh, I don't know, pioneer days. It doesn't, and that jacks up the life. Oh, never mind. You know what I'm talking about. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Destroy these lands.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
25 before the hour. The other night, was it last night, when the guy called in, wanted to know where he could get a history, or the guy he was driving with wanted to know where he could get a history of the United States that reflected the real history of the country, not the kind of stuff that that we tell our school children and we were told is true. And you know, I was kind of dumbfounded by the question. Not trying to be an arrogant ass here, but I would just assume if you really wanted to know the true history of the United States, that you have the whole damn internet at your disposal. It's there. But the guy asked the question. It was a genuine question. And with a little help from my friends, we tried to answer it. You know, a people's history of the United States. Do Howard Zinn stuff to start with. But Roz wrote in the subject line, and to think they want to defund education in the United States. Roz writes, Mike, that caller is so bereft of knowledge. Makes you wonder how in the hell he became a lawyer. His education seems pathetic. I live outside the U.S. and probably know 100 times more about the country than he does. Has he ever heard of books? As for Howard Zinn's book, A History of the U.S., well, I bought that for my son-in-law several years ago. Imagine a grown man asking where he can learn about history. Roz. Well, that's kind of the way I felt, too. I just didn't want to climb down the guy's throat with that kind of a question. I used to think that any time someone was asking a question, they were genuinely interested in getting some information. I realize that's not the case any longer. Sometimes people ask a question just to be a smartass or to be passively aggressive or whatever. But so I'm glad Roz answered it that way. I don't know what to tell people. I get a lot of emails from people that say, where do I begin? I don't have a clue. I mean, there is nothing that I'm aware of, that has all the answers that we're all looking for. It just requires a lifetime of work. Or like Douglas, who wrote Restaurant at the End of the Universe, or what was that? Who is that? Douglas, can't think of his name. But like he said, at the end of the... Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but at the end of that series of books, he's dead now too, isn't he? He died. He wrote the answer to everything. He promised he would reveal it in his last book. And he did. He said the answer to everything is the number 42. Which just really intrigued me because, well, there are a number of ways that I link to that number, but I played football in high school, and back in the day when we had quarterbacks, halfbacks, and fullbacks, those days are long gone. It's just running backs now. But I was number 42. That was my football jersey. And when he said that, the answer to everything is the number 42, I thought, there it is. Mike, figure out. What did he mean? Well, but, you know, he's gone. From 2 days ago, from Prairie 2, you took a death pledge. He writes, new unemployment claims are up sharply and have not in 3 years. Wait a minute. New unemployment claims are up sharply and have not in 3 years dropped to levels where you could think jobs were being created. Yet the government survey found 151,000 jobs were created in October. The apparent contradiction is accounted for by where the jobs were created, almost entirely in temp services, retail sales, and healthcare. Corporations continue to pad the bottom line by firing people and replacing them with cheaper workers. Even though overall they're hiring more people, the high unemployment rate giving corporations the leverage they need to drive down wages. The latest scam, cutting nursing home workers from $10 an hour to $8 an hour because Obamacare cut Medicare payments. This is not true, of course. Nursing homes continue to be highly profitable and are a growth industry. Temp workers accounted for 35,000 new jobs, mostly in October, with strong demand for professionals in accounting, internet technology, and finance. All used to be good-paying middle-class jobs, but no longer. Retail is hiring on stronger sales, but they're up on heavy discounting, and those jobs are not likely to exist after inventory is sold down again after Christmas. The fundamentals of the economy are getting worse, not getting better. Sales contracts for existing homes dropped in September. Foreclosure malfeasance by the banks is being suggested as the cause. But taking a couple of million houses off the market should be pushing up prices, but it isn't. 4 million homeowners are estimated to owe twice what their homes are currently worth. A banker would walk away from an investment like that, the investment was that bad, but a banker will spit nails at the suggestion a homeowner should do that. In Middle English, in Old English, the word mortgage means death pledge. It literally, mortgage, death pledge. Bankers take that seriously, no matter that they created the housing bubble. In bankruptcy, a rich guy can have the mortgage on his vacation, bungalow, or yacht reduced to the market value. Not so for the middle-class homeowner. Pay or die. You can expect to find bargains at Christmas if you still have money to spend, especially on Chinese-made products. But your canned goods and such will be going up with the weak dollar, and from Wall Street using its free money from the Federal Reserve to run up the commodity markets. Obama could force commodity traders to have higher margin reserves, and that would drop oil prices back down close to the cost of production. That is around $30 a barrel or less. Gold set a new record, closing in on $1,400 an ounce, and oil is edging toward $90 a barrel, which is three times what it should be. But Wall Street has to make money somehow. You can't expect rich people to go out and get jobs in this economy. Prairie 2. PrairieNumeral2.com, if you want to check out his website. Henry is driving in PA, listening on Sirius. Hello, Henry.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Years.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, you mellowed out.
Mellowed out?
You mellowed out. You're only talking about the flying monkey right. What happened to the flying monkey left? I want to talk about them. They sold us out so long ago,
well,
these Democrats.
That's true.
That it's hard to even believe that they call themselves left.
I know. I don't disagree. There are still people on the left. It's just most of us do not have either a microphone or the energy, strength. I mean, how long are you supposed to struggle? How long are you supposed to take to the streets until the job gets done? I know. But so many people on the new left, you know, the old left was back in the 20s and 30s. The new left popped up in the 60s. And what the hell is left of the new left? A bunch of us people who are either waiting for Social Security or are already on it. I mean, you know, where's the 20 somethings and the 30 somethings that were so active in the 60s? Where are those people?
Well, most of us are trying to just make a living now, or they sold out a long time ago.
Well, that's
but the people I'm most concerned about right now. Everybody's screaming about Obama and how he sold out. I'm looking at the entire Democratic Party and where they've sold out. I mean, this middle-of-the-road group of people that got into office, and the very first thing they did from the day they got into office was to sell out the very people that put them into office.
Well,
and then they wondered why nobody voted for them on the last election.
Yeah.
You know, Nancy Pelosi's first thing when they got power was to say, oh, impeachment's off the table.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that's true since they didn't have the Senate to convict. But then they got the entire Congress, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and John Connors said, we are going to investigate these war criminals. And the rest of the Democratic Party said, no, 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 no. Now, why should the gay people? I heard somebody yesterday claiming that the gays, 30% of them voted for the Republicans in the last election. They must hate themselves. And I'm thinking, why would a gay person vote for anybody? Since, let's see, they still don't have equal rights the same as we do. A gay man can't get married. A gay woman can't get married and visit her spouse in the hospital and have the right over life and death like my wife and your wife does. They had don't ask, don't tell off the table. I mean, they had a beat. The judge had said, boom, and what's the first thing they said? Oh, no, that's not the way we want to do it. We're going to appeal it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that has gone down, they've sold out, and just completely deserted the people that put them into power.
Well, you know, this is what I was talking earlier tonight with Laura Flanders about. It's going to take a mighty wind to blow the sails of what's left of the left and create a new left. To counteract, not just counteract these right-wing crazy people, but to replace them with positive energy instead of all this negativity. Henry, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. We'll be right back. The hour coming up next hour, I'm going to take a not a look at Bush's book, but his attitude about torture. And now that he has admitted to being the executive who authorized the use of torture, you know, the feeling among legal circles around the planet is that Bush has inadvertently, perhaps, because he's such a dumbass and such a, you know, he likes to brag and strut his ass around, but he set himself up for, in a sane world, somebody arresting him when he steps foot outside of this country. It's a shame that he would have to go away from this country to be arrested and put on trial for crimes against humanity. But the Obama administration has made it very clear that they are not interested in justice prevailing where it concerns George W. Bush. They just aren't. The attitude of the Obama administration is, well, you know, we want to look backward, not forward, or forward, not backward. What? Oh, okay. Well, then why not do this, Eric Holder? Why not clean out all the federal prisons in the United States? Just grant everybody clemency, executive clemency. I mean, that makes as much sense as allowing no action against a war criminal who is directly responsible for the deaths of 5,000 Americans based on lies and the grievous wounding of another 35,000 and the deaths of, nobody will ever know, 200, 500,000, a million Iraqis. I mean, Jesus God, that's what we're going to talk about next hour. James is in Atlanta, or driving through Atlanta, listening on Sirius. Hello, James.
Hey, how you doing, man? Exceptional show. I was telling you to screen it, I drive, I live in Atlanta. I didn't even know you were from Georgia or you reside in Georgia. or yet any affiliation to that crazy ass state. I am actually proud because who's on the radio on the day and on during the daytime. It's just disgusting radio.
Oh sure. Sure.
It's, you know, right wing radio.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just like to thank you, man. I've discovered you and it's been great. One thing that lady you had on earlier was talking about, she wrote a book about it. You know, obviously you probably already know I'm Afro-American, and I saw this thing coming a long time ago, man. I saw this thunderstorm coming up a long time ago. I read a piece, I can't remember where, it's been a while back, about, you know, like white supremacist groups and where they pretty much start up and how they get started up in the states that it really shocked me to see the states that really have a problem as far as white supremacist groups and these militant groups that pop up is the states where, you know, they have a growing minority population, like Southern California. I was shocked to hear about that. As leftist California is, that they were having a problem. Texas and Georgia is up there too. You know, so these things were, this was inevitable. This was going to happen. It was going to happen anyway. It's just when. And I guess how in some cases.
Well, you know,
another thing also, depending on the Obama administration for any type of action on anything as far as progressive, I mean, at this point, we should be quite clear that it's not going to happen, man.
Right.
This guy is a disappointment. I despise looking at this guy on television because you and I both know that this guy does not represent our interests, period. You know,
right? Well,
I tell my friends in the circle that I run with, because they still have some optimism about this individual, but they sometimes get turned off because I pretty much voice my hatred for this guy because it feels like you stabbed us in the chest. And I'm still young. I'm 29. This guy has been a total disappointment. And one other thing, and I'll let you go. I'm not from this country. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago, and I'm not. You know, this is basically a warning. This is a warning to every American out there. Every country that these fascists touch is going to destroy, period. I was surprised and shocked. I went back a couple months ago to my island, and my friends basically work for a dollar an hour. I compared it. Quite frankly, it's like a dollar U.S. an hour. They don't make anything near. They still work the same hours, long hours. The healthcare system is destroyed by, you know, they destroyed by these fascist ideologies. And they still think it's a democracy. They don't have any input at all. And I was surprised to see that I was driving on one of the roads, and I saw a sign that says I can't remember word for word, but I know it said what did it call it? American Chamber of Commerce endorsed. The American Chamber of Commerce endorsed something in that country.
Mm-hmm.
And it, pollution is terrible. The air smells bad. It's very dirty, visibly dirty. The air, you can smell it, is bad. They have no control over their oil industry in that country. The economy there is going in the tank. Inflation is not hyperinflation just yet. The only reason why I haven't got to that point is because they still produce, they still have some resources. But I can see very bad things. Just going back from when I lived there and going back this time, I can just see the devastation the degrade in living standards in that country. Everything is visibly going down, you know, as far as you can see the prices of items.
Well,
you know,
James, we're just about out of time here, and I hope you're going to call back again sometime, but we've got to go to this top of the hour break. But I think what you're describing is what invariably happens under capitalism. At some point, the destruction becomes so profound, and I'm talking about not just the destruction of the environment, because capitalism doesn't give a damn about that, but the destruction of human lives, destruction of dreams, destruction of truth, destruction of ethical conduct, destruction of honor. This is what capitalism feeds on, and it's a shame. I'm sorry about what's happening in your country. It's also happening here, or in your former country. Good to hear from you, James. I hope you will call in again. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. So, have you been following the interviews? You know, George Bush has a book out. Who knew he could write, right? Have you been following the interviews? Have you been... the one that irritates me the most, I guess, is the one by... who's the guy on in the morning? Matt Lauer. His interview... I don't know. Bush is Bush. Well, Matt Lauer is Matt Lauer. It just makes you want to go to... what is Matt Lauer? NBC? Yeah. You just want to go to NBC Studios and say to Matt Lauer, have you no honor at long last, sir? Have you no decency? You're going to sit there and talk to a war criminal and giggle with him? Oh, never mind. Never mind. We'll get to that in a second. Janine in Youngstown, Ohio writes, Mike, I was just watching my local news, and yes, John Kasich is asking Governor Strickland. Kasich is the Republican incoming governor. Strickland is a Democratic outgoing governor. John Kasich is asking Governor Strickland to nix the plan for a passenger rail system in Ohio. Kasich wants Governor Strickland to return the money to the federal government and have President Obama use it to reduce the federal budget deficit. I guess this is a preview of how Governor-elect Kasich will spur job growth, as well as keeping money flowing into the hands of big oil by making sure people either drive, fly, or take a bus. Janine. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of that is grandstanding. Kasich is a punk. I don't know Kasich from Adam's house cat, but like I said... he had a bit appearance, as did I, in the movie Outfoxed. And it was taken from an interview when I was on one of those Hugh Hewitt or one of those fourth-level right-wingers that used to be on Fox years ago. I think this is when Molly was about a year old. But no, it's before that. I don't think Molly was born because I was still on IE America. But he's just a booger-eating punk. And the fact that Kasich, and the fact that he's governor of Ohio, Ohioans... not the Democrats. You people have nothing but my pity, as I direct towards myself living here in Georgia, but with the criminal we have here. But I'll tell you what, you folks in Ohio, you think times have been rough? 4 years of Kasich, you're going to be picking up tin cans along I-75 outside of Dayton. Trust me. Bush! George W. Bush. I hope I live long enough to see this murderer arrested and tried, put on trial. It'll never happen in this country because we are sinking into fascism at a much more rapid pace than I would have thought 5, 6, 3 years ago. But I digress. As most of us know, most of us who still use a percentage of our brain cells, the human rights experts globally have long sought information from the Bush crime family administration for details of who was ultimately responsible for approving the simulated drownings that the CIA committed against detainees during the Bush era, the Bush reign of terror. The simulated drownings, of course, torture, waterboarding. As the Washington Post points out, Bush now makes clear in his book that he personally approved the use of that coercive technique against alleged September 11th plotter Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. An admission the human rights experts say one day could have legal consequences for him, for Bush. The Post goes on, in his book titled Decision Points, Bush recounts being asked by the CIA whether it could proceed with waterboarding Mohammed. Bush writes that his reply was, damn right! I don't know. Bush taught himself to walk like a gunslinger. He pictured himself as a cowboy when what he really was a half-witted fool who was given the presidency of the United States twice, first by the Supreme Court, second by rigging the voting machines. And look what he did. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I don't know why when all the pundits sit around and talk about this massive, the right-wing pundits talk about this massive debt that we're facing, why nobody brings up the fact that 40% of that debt is a direct result of Bush's tax cuts. Yeah. Anyway, Bush has previously acknowledged endorsing what he described as the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. I always found that to be one of the most diabolical terms I have ever heard. It belongs in a horror science fiction movie. Enhanced interrogation. What was that movie, Kathy, where Dustin Hall was getting his teeth drilled out? What was that movie? Marathon Man. Huh?
Is it safe?
Is it safe, right? with the tennis.
Laurence Olivier. With the most chilling performance I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Beat Hannibal Lecter.
Well, I don't think anyone beats Hannibal Lecter. Well, okay, yes.
He didn't have a drill.
Dick Cheney beats Hannibal Lecter, hands down. But anyway, the enhanced interrogation techniques that the CIA was using at the time, absolute flat-out torture, the kind of stuff that we executed members of the Japanese High Command for committing against our people in the Pacific theater of World War II. We hanged them. But Bush, being ordained by God to invade countries and murder people, babies, children, old people, 10-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and pregnant women, immolate them, set them on fire, burn them alive. Since God ordered George Bush to do that, where's the problem with using water to torture somebody, right? I mean, after all, I was doing God's work, right, George? Doing God's work. If God told you to invade Iraq, if God suggested you invade Afghanistan, of course, it was Dick Cheney whispering into your ear, but how in the hell would you have known the difference, right? But if God told you to do all this stuff, then to question anything you did was to question your sky spook. And a good religious person, Jew, Gentile, Christian or Muslim, will not question the sky spook. To do so is to bring down instant death. Right? So, having previously said he supported, he endorsed enhanced interrogation techniques, he added, I personally authorized the torture. Dick Cheney, in a television interview last February, before he went in to have his heart removed for the final time, Cheney said, I was a big supporter of waterboarding. Yes, I was. I even went and watched a couple times. You know, a lot of you stupid asses in the media thought I was looking at the videos. Wrong. I actually went to Guantanamo. Oh, my God. I haven't had that much pleasure since I read some of my wife's third-rate novels. You know, the ones with the lesbian sex scenes? I found that pretty interesting, too. But the waterboarding, the torture, oh, my God. I was able to drop my Viagra prescription down the commode.
Thank you.
with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. When she's 10 feet tall. Now that Bush's book is out, he is doing his cowboy thing again. Oh yeah, I authorized the torture. Of course I authorized the torture. Who'd you think authorized it? Huh? Of course I authorized it. Because God told me to. Bush told an interviewer a week before leaving the White House that, quote, "I firmly reject the word torture." And he reiterates that view in his book. Not torture. What is it? It's enhanced interrogation. It's waterboarding. That's not torture. What is it? I don't know. It's not murder either that he's responsible for in sending 5,000 Americans to their deaths and, pick a number, 100,000, 500,000, a million Iraqis to their deaths. That's not murder either. That's, what would that be? That's making the world safe by eliminating Saddam Hussein. And the extra 500,000 deaths that went along with that, American, Iraqi, NATO allies, you know, Brits, whatever country was stupid enough to join that coalition. I don't mean the country was stupid. The countries that joined figured they would have a piece of the corpse, you know, all that oil. I'm talking about the soldiers. The soldiers in every single country, including the United States, who joined their various militaries, one assumes, you know, except for the ones who's out, get training here so I can go kill some of these sons of bitches. You know, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the ones who really felt dedicated to the service of their country and found out that what they're going to do is go to, well, a generation goes Vietnam, go kill their children. And then it was Panama, go kill their children. And Central America, go kill their children. And Iraq and Afghanistan, go kill their children. You know, that's tough. So George Bush, I firmly reject the word torture. God told me what to do. It wasn't torture. God told me it wasn't torture. Okay. That's Bush. What about Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder? What about our exalted current president and exalted current attorney general? You know, the guys who were riding into town after the corruption of 8 years of Bush and Cheney. The new sheriff coming to town. Clean up the mess, restore sanity, dignity, honor, justice, truth. Obama and Holder have both said waterboarding is an act of torture proscribed by international law. But, they're not going to do anything to punish Bush or anybody in his administration for authorizing it, and in Cheney's case, for probably actually going to Guantanamo and using the canes and the whips and the torture devices. I can just see Cheney standing in there over somebody strapped down on a table with their feet 6 inches elevated from their head, and Cheney laughing maniacally as he pours water down this poor bastard's throat. You can see it, too. You know you can. Be careful with that, though, because you'll see it right before you go to sleep at night, and it will not be a pleasant night. The United Nations Convention Against Torture, written a quarter of a century ago, requires that all parties to that agreement seek to enforce its provisions, even for acts committed elsewhere. If we know that the government of Myanmar, or what's it called, Burma. If we know that the government of Burma is torturing people in violation of the UN Convention Against Torture, it is our obligation to try to enforce the prescription against torture. Now, how do we do that? Well, we can invade Burma. We can arrest and put on trial the leaders of that godforsaken country. What do we do when it is a leader of the United States and his entire legal department that commits torture? Well, obviously, we, the people of the United States, are not going to do anything because we're too either goddamn cowardly or have no honor left whatsoever or think ethics and morality is something that belongs to a different era. But we are not going to do anything. Okay. Maybe Spain will. Maybe prosecutors in Spain, maybe prosecutors in Belgium, maybe somebody in Uganda, maybe somebody in South Africa, maybe somebody in Venezuela will snatch George Bush someplace and put this murderous bastard on trial. In the meantime, the interviewers sit there with him on television.
So, what was the funniest thing that happened to you while you were president?
Words, weapons, sharpened knives, makes you wonder how the other half died. Other half died. Makes you wonder, wonder.
Why are
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So while Matt Lauer and George Bush and all the people who are going to be interviewing Bush, I think even the baby Jesus, Sean Hannity, is going to interview him. Or maybe he already has. I don't know. All the stroking of this war criminal, this killer, is to me it literally is nauseous to see. I mean, why not have I mean pick somebody. I don't think Adolf Hitler ever executed anyone, did he? He never dropped the pellets of poison into the machine that then gassed the Jews. George Bush didn't fly any of the airplanes that incinerated children. But will somebody, is it just a quantitative difference? Is there a qualitative difference here between George Bush and any mass killer? If there is, I don't see it. The Washington Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch said, quote, according to the Washington Post, quote, waterboarding is seen by legal experts around the world as torture, and it is universally prosecutable as a crime. The fact that none of us expect any serious consequences from this administration, and he's referring to the Obama administration, is what is most interesting. Well, I probably wouldn't have used those words, most interesting, most criminal, equally criminal. The emeritus law professor at DePaul University, who co-chaired the UN Experts Committee that drafted this torture convention, said that Bush's admission could expose him to prosecution. Theoretically, Georgetown University law professor David Cole, longstanding critic of Bush's interrogation and detention policies, called prosecution unlikely. Cole said, quote, the fact that he did admit it suggests he believes he is politically immune from being held accountable. Why, sure. Bush, Cheney, Gonzalez, you, Y-O-O, all of the people who took the United States into the sewer, who removed from us the ability ever to declare some other government's policies illegal, immoral, in violation of Geneva Conventions, yada, yada, yada. They destroyed all of that. We do not have the moral standing to hear Hillary Clinton declare that the burning of wives in Afghanistan is somehow abhorrent, is to suggest that our torturing people is not, or something. I don't know. I get lost in the comparisons. What is the difference? What is the difference? The tribal, cultural, perverted, sick, Islamic, and it's not just Islam. Hindus do this too. Hell, I don't know. Did the Christians and Jews do it? If the family of the new husband decides that the new wife is unacceptable, burn her alive. Burn her. Well, why not? What is the difference between that and burning alive with bombs and missiles the children or the soon-to-be brides in gathered together in some complex someplace because some freak bastard sitting in front of a TV screen back in the United States who has his or her finger on a remote trigger can say, okay, we have information. You see that group of people there? Well, right there in the middle is an Al-Qaeda person, so we're going to take him out. Well, what about the 20 people standing around? You know, all those little kids? And I don't know. I have to follow my orders. Yaol, I must follow orders. That's all I'm doing is following orders. Click. What's the difference? I wish somebody would explain the difference. Got an email from CS. So George W. Bush is promoting his book, huh? Listening to Joe Scarborough leading his audience, trying to save the legacy of George W. Bush was painful to watch. Maybe this, maybe that. Scarborough said, what if they would have done this? What if they would have done that? Funny how during the election, I didn't hear one word from the Morning Joe crew about how 38% of the current debt is to pay off the Bush-Cheney supplements. Such things as tax cuts for the rich, two wars, Medicare Part D, not one peep from you so-called fiscal conservatives while Bush and Cheney spent our national wealth like a crack hoe with a credit card. Selective amnesia, right? How nice for the conservative wackos. I know it's a stretch, but for argument's sake, let's say Americans can conveniently forget about the 30,000 wounded U.S. soldiers, 5,000 dead U.S. soldiers, and only God knows how many Iraqis and Afghans. Forget that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rove took the goodwill of the world after 9/11 and turned it to hate and mistrust. Just for argument's sake, let's say we can all forget that. How these chicken hawks sent our troops into battle without proper armor or any clear-cut plan beyond George declaring mission accomplished. Never mind, military strategists didn't think it was a good idea to get rid of the one dictator in the Middle East that had an iron boot on the throat of fanatical Islam, Saddam Hussein. Remember, the terrorist, Osama bin Lunatic, the degenerates that caused 9/11? Forget Iran. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rove, and Morning Joe can have victory in Iraq when they can stroll through Iraq without an armored division and air support to keep them from harm. You know, like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has done several times since the USA got rid of Saddam. Forget the trillions of dollars wasted in Iraq or the $20 billion missing or the 175,000 weapons misplaced or all the arms dealers and war profiteers that milked our national treasury. Forget all about the constitutional violations, domestic spying, lying, Justice Department bias, Walter Reed catastrophe, Abu Ghraib, soldiers getting electrocuted in showers due to shoddy military contractor work. Yeah, once again, Imagine we live in a country where almost half the population is dumber than a tree full of monkeys. These citizens are so damn ignorant they allowed some of the worst criminals in history to run the whole show for 8 years. Even worse, these numbskulls liked it so much, they want more. More of the waste, the fraud, abuse, lies, incompetence, scandal, fear-mongering, sexual deviancy, corruption, offshore tax evasion, media consolidation, arms dealing, reckless economics, deregulation, war profiteering, Bush corporate welfare, constitutional violations, and a corporate crime wave of epic proportions. Americans want more. And they made that decision with their vote. C.S. writes, I'm going to make sure future generations know who it really was who ruined the United States before they can enjoy the fruits. Republican, conservative teabaggers are going down as the worst sucker fools in the history of mankind. Karma, karma's going to be a real bitch. C.S. Well, yeah, if you believe in karma as maybe one of Newton's laws of motion, action, reaction. But, you know, don't spend a whole lot of your time waiting for that to happen. Really don't, because I think it's pretty clear that the serious criminals, the really bad ones, the ones that are truly beyond redemption, the ones that need to be delivered to their God, since it is their God that tells them all these horrible things to do, they need to be delivered to their God. Those folks never, ever, ever feel the invisible whip. They really don't. Karma is not something that therefore exists. It may exist in the physical laws of motion, but it certainly does not exist in the laws of human experience. You think? He's on a book tour. We'll be right back. Before the hour, you know, sometimes I do think about how the legacy of the Bush crime family, how does it affect me directly? And I think about all the ways that it affects me indirectly. The shame that I feel as an American, I never felt that as maybe I should have. But I never felt it as a kid growing up, even though, you know, I came to realize that we were doing things around the globe when I was a kid growing up that were terrible, terrible things. It was setting up the full and certain belief in so many people around the world that the United States was a hideous, aggressive conqueror who would stop at nothing to steal other countries' resources and eventually to co-opt other people's labor forces at the expense of their own, of our own. But, I was brought up like most people were brought up in I don't care what country it is, but especially in the United States, there was a specialness about this country. There was, even if you rejected the idea of manifest destiny, which it didn't take me long to realize once I got out of public school, that manifest destiny was, that whole theory was came out of a sick mind of a religious freak who, it was the same thing that Hitler used against the Jews, manifest destiny. I mean, this is what we're supposed to do. God has ordered us to, Hitler thought, I'm sure, God is ordering me to butcher the Jews. And in this country, God is ordering us to conquer and destroy the indigenous people in this country, no matter the expense, no matter what we have to do, kill them all. Well, you know, when you finally confront that, when you're 16, 17, 19, 20, if you ever do, just like the other night when the guy called in and wanted to know where to get a history of the United States, I didn't want to act like a real bastard on the phone. I mean, he did call, his friend had him call in, and somebody calls in with an honest question like that, what are you going to do? But I'm dumbfounded. I sit there and like, what? You sound like you're in your 30s, 40s? And you really do believe that, you know, the pilgrims invited the Indians into a Thanksgiving because the Indians had shown the settlers how to grow corn or whatever. You really think that was the story? That's what happened? Do you really think that Christopher Columbus, when he arrived here, he didn't arrive as an angel of death sent by the Holy Roman Empire to, the same time that the Inquisition was going on? Columbus was sent to find more people who could be tortured in the name of Jesus, you know how it goes, right? So, having been brought up, especially in the 50s in this country, when all of a sudden, for the first time in the history of the human race, there were two globally competing ideologies that had the power to destroy the entire planet, with enough buttons being pushed and enough key locations. Push this, push this, push this, push that. Okay, there goes Northern Europe, there goes North America, there goes Africa, there goes China, you know. Having been brought up in that milieu, in that era, in that age of instant destruction, hanging over us all the time, it was not very difficult to pump into our little heads this idea of specialness. We were the forces of good. They were the forces of evil. And once those monumental forces of evil that existed before the real forces of evil came into being, the Nazis, once we got rid of the Nazis and the fascists, then we had to fight the real bastards, you know, the communists. Well, given all that, it was not difficult to inculcate in two or three generations of Americans growing up that dedication to the fatherland, the motherland, the homeland, whatever, was absolutely necessary to survival. Not dedication to your family, not dedication to the truth, not dedication and respect for morality and ethical behavior and respect for the planet and respect for your fellow human. Now, are you kidding me? Those are liberal ideas. What we were taught was Deutschland über alles, only the English, the American version of that. And that really makes me angry. Because sometimes, you know, at this point in my life, I can look back and say, geez, what if, you know, that game, what if that would have happened or that wouldn't have? Or what if we would have had leadership at any point in our history over the last 150 years that, or last 100 years, that really said, wait a second, we're on the wrong path here. We're on the wrong path. And would have refocused what we could have been. Where would we be now? I think about that a lot. I do. I think about it. I wonder how I can pass that on to my 6-year-old and my grandchildren and my adult children. You know, how can I? Oh, well. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you a woman?